Well, to the Olympics. It's day four. Tonight, the U.S. gets a chance to shine again in the pool. Two primetime finals. The women's 200-meter freestyle, in which Katie Ledecky is the favorite, and the men's 200 butterfly, in which Michael Phelps is looking for the 20th gold medal of his career, and a rematch with a South African rival who beat him 4 years ago. The U.S. has 14 swimming medals so far, including a gold last night in the dramatic 100-meter breaststroke. But what does it all mean for geopolitics? Greg Myrie edits NPR's Olympic blog, The Torch. He joins us now. Hi, Greg.
Hi, Robin.
And talk about that breaststroke last night. We reviewed, or previewed it rather, yesterday. The race really came down to the American Lily King and the Russian Yulia Efimova. And before they hit the pool, there was a lot of finger wagging. Lots of storylines here. Remind us.
Yeah, the tension was palpable as that race began. Efimova, the Russian, has been banned twice for doping, but she was cleared just in time to compete. And when she had her semifinal race on Sunday night, she popped out of the water and wagged her finger, "I'm number one." Lily King, the American, was waiting to race, was watching this in the waiting room, and she sort of wagged her finger, "number one," but no. So this began the drama on Sunday night. And King is this very outspoken, pretty brash 19-year-old American, and clearly she was making references to Efimova's doping. Mm-hmm. And they got in the pool last night. They were side by side, lanes 4 and 5, very close race. But King took the gold and made the additional comments afterwards. It shows, saying, you know, essentially shows you can compete clean. So it's rekindled the doping story. Olympics.
She's not backing down. And by the way, she was asked about an American who had a shadow over them, and she said, no matter who it is. But the crowds seem to be vilifying the Russian athletes. Talk more about that.
Right. And this is something you really haven't seen. The commentators are mentioning this as personally as somebody who's watched the Olympics for decades. I never recall this where you were seeing these kinds of booing going on. We'll have to see how much it was directed at Efimova, who had been, as we said, caught doping or with banned substances twice, if it was directed more specifically at her. But other Russian athletes have been booed. And I think this is something we'll keep an eye on to see how much blowback the Russians get because of the doping scandal.
Well, how much is this like past Olympics? For instance, the 60s, the 70s, the Cold War bled into the competition, the Soviet Union, the U.S. competing for global dominance. Is it like that, or is it more about this one issue, doping?
I think in this case, it's more about the doping for a couple reasons. This has attracted the attention, the doping scandal. It's just so widespread in Russia. But also, Russia just doesn't have the Olympic team that it did when it was part of the Soviet Union. There was this very strong competition between the Americans and the Soviets, and you didn't know who was going to win the medal race. And there was so much Soviet era. It was a proxy war in many ways. The Russians come in far, far behind the Americans now. In fact, the Chinese are well ahead of the Russians. So it's a different era, and you don't have that same level of geopolitical tension.
We'll talk a little bit about that because you've written that medal counts reflect a lot more than just athletic abilities. You mentioned China. It didn't even participate in the Olympics until 1984. These games have been going on for 100 years. So compare their count to other countries participating for the century. And then, you know, what do you mean about the medal counts reflecting more than athletic ability?
Yes, we looked at the tables. It was extraordinary because just by looking at the tables, you could almost see a country's rise and fall. China being one of the most dramatic cases, it didn't participate in the Summer Games until 1984. It was a very closed, troubled country through much of the first half of the 20th century, and then it had an inward-looking communist government. But around 1980, as China began to open up to the world, it also took part in the Olympics. And since 84, it's had this dramatic rise in its Olympic performance. The high watermark so far was Beijing, when it won more gold medals than any country in 2008. And now it's consistently second to the United States in terms of winning overall medals. So China's just one example, but if you chart it, you don't know if you're looking at the rise of China's medals or the rise of China's economy, because they look pretty similar.
Well, it's so interesting because the Olympics do so much. They, for instance, allow you to see the first American woman competing in a head covering. She was a sword fighter, a fencer. Not sword fighter, a fencer. But you just see it. It's a visual that you don't often get to see. So I'm hearing you say, look at it through that kind of prism, too. What are we learning about other parts of the world? NPR International Editor Greg Myrie, who edits NPR's Olympics blog, The Torch. Greg, thanks so much.
Thank you, Robin.